Welcome to the latest installment of the Salt City Hoops podcast. I'm Clint Johnston, joined for this episode by Ben Dowsett, and introducing, the first time on the podcast, our fellow writer at Salt City Hoops, Dakota Schmidt. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Thanks for having us.
No problem.
So, the Jazz are coming off arguably their worst back-to-back losses of the season, both against the Minnesota Timberwolves. The first game was in Minnesota, where they lost 98-72 and set a franchise record for futility from the field in the process, which set the table for a return to form when they returned home to face the same Timberwolves again. Unfortunately, that's not what happened. They gave up 112 points and lost 112-97. They got beat pretty well in both games, and that was after playing really better basketball than I think almost anyone expected from this Jazz team this season. In fact, they'd won five of their last six home games prior to the Wolves loss. So we're going to spend some time talking about those losses to the Timberwolves and what those losses may mean or what they may not mean. So, Ben, watching those games, what did you take away from that makes you think we might be able to use it to judge where this team is at?
Well, you know, obviously, and as unfortunate as it is, we do have to give this caveat for this whole season. But if I'm looking at things just from the perspective of, you know, I want the Jazz to win, and, I watch the games rooting for the Jazz, If obviously I'm quite disappointed by those two Timberwolves games, if that's my mindset and my only mindset. The Jazz were not able to get a whole lot going. They had problems pretty much all over the place. They were missing Derek Favors in the second game and Gordon Hayward in the first game at the end of his five-game absence. But and to me, the largest problem in that case was the overall offense. Offensively, during this last little run that you mentioned in your opening, where the Jazz have been a little bit better recently, they've been a decent offensive team, you know, near league average at least, and with certain lineups even above league average. And both games against the Timberwolves, who are not exactly world beaters defensively, the Jazz were completely inept. In the second game, the loss of Favors completely annihilated their pick and roll. They had no pick and roll offense, especially from the roll man. They only finished three plays from the roll man in the pick and roll in that entire second game. They scored two of those three baskets, but only three plays the entire game. And just very disheartening. And to me, those who have looked on Salt City Hoops in the past 24 hours or so will see that I did just publish a piece regarding Favors and Cantor and the pairing together, how well they're going to be able to play as a pair in the future, and the idea that Utah does need to make sort of a decision on this idea very soon, because if they don't sign Cantor before the season, he will enter restricted free agency. And as far as that goes, obviously we didn't see Cantor in the second game, but or Favors, that is, excuse me, but Cantor really let me down. Those who read me frequently know I was very high on him going into the year, and he's been my biggest disappointment for the season. His defense is just not there. His offense has come in spurts, but typically not with Favors on the court at the same time. And I really thought he had a chance to go out there starting in Favors' place against the T-Wolves at home and make an impact, and he was mostly invisible. So that was my largest impression from that game.
And you were talking about the decision about Cantor going into next season. They kind of have to make that, you know, before June and the draft, because right now Utah's slated to, you know, hopefully be in the top five of this potentially, you know, deep draft. And some of the better players, Jabari Parker, Julius Randle, are some options for Utah to look at if, you know, Cantor doesn't work out for the front court.
Very true. Joel Embiid as well. I wouldn't be shocked to see a decision made by the Jazz on that subject before the end of this regular season or before the NBA draft. I know the trade deadline will pass, so if there was to be a potential trade, which I did raise the possibility of in my piece, that would, of course, have to take place before the deadline next month. But it has unfortunately reached a point now. The Cantor and Favors combination on the floor, they're both number three overall draft picks, and you just have, or both top five, and you if those two players aren't going to be able to be a reasonable foundation going forward, you have to cut your losses and you have to get another plan, because it's tough. That's a loss for a franchise no matter what, essentially having to maybe give up on a third overall pick. So it's not a decision to be taken lightly, but at the same time, the Jazz have their future to look at.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely in terms of the, you know, front court players that I mentioned, and to, you know, hopefully, you know, boost up their wing at, you know, both shooting guard and small forward. Of course, Jefferson is not the most likely option for small forward, you know, as we go into the next couple seasons.
Well, that's true. And another thing that I took from these recent games with the Timberwolves, and for the slight stretch before with Hayward being out, is we started the season without Trey Burke and promptly went 1-11. You know, we were 2-3 without Hayward, which I was actually fairly impressed with. I think that's acceptable. Without Favors this season, we're 1-2, and we've given up 100 points in every single one of those games. I think we're starting to see that this team really is as thin as we kind of anticipated they would be, and injuries to almost any of the core young players, but certainly I think injuries to Favors or Burke would be all but insurmountable to this team. And because of where the Jazz are this season, because of who they are, because of, frankly, the incentive to possibly lose games to get a high draft pick, I think that there's a distinct possibility that we're going to see more of these little injuries cropping up and costing individual players some games, and that could really affect the way that they perform on the floor. What are you guys' thoughts about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And something that Clint, you and I discussed just real briefly before we started the podcast is that, you know, the Jazz, when they are faced with a close situation where a guy might be ready to play, might not be ready to play, there's really no conscious reason why he would ever play in those circumstances. There is virtually no upside this season, and there is a lot of downside, especially for any of the younger core players. So, and, you know, unfortunately, there's lots of noise around the league about whether this is a good thing for the league and so on and so forth, but right now the rules are the rules, and seeing little situations like that where we aren't sure how healthy a guy really is and erring on the side of caution is probably going to happen more than once for the Jazz down the stretch.
Yeah, I agree. Another thing that I noticed, and this feeds into a fantastic piece that Dakota did, comparing Trey Burke to other point guards around the league, trying to get a handle on just how good he is now and how good he might be. Burke really struggled against the Wolves. He averaged 9 points and only 3.5 assists on 30% shooting. You know, and going up against Ricky Rubio seemed to bother him. So, Dakota, what are your thoughts on Trey and his ability to play against some of the better point guards, especially some of the bigger, longer, better defensive point guards in the league?
I think just talking about last night's game against, you know, the Timberwolves, I think the loss of Derek Favors really hurt Trey Burke because, you know, like, you know, Ben said earlier on in the podcast, besides Favors, the Jazz really don't have a role man for the pick and roll, and that really, you know, hurt the Jazz and Trey Burke last night because, you know, without the option of a pick and roll, Ricky Rubio is just going to attack him defensively, and he really showcased how, you know, raw he is on the offensive end because, like I mentioned in the podcast, Burke does the majority of its offensive damage in pick and rolls. And without that, you know, we really don't know what he can bring to the team. Of course, that was showcased last night.
Yeah, a lot of the space that he typically sees coming around those screens, which we've talked about on this podcast in the past, was just not there. When it was Love defending and when it was Pekovic, they weren't high hedging and jumping the full way out, but they were moving the big man over at least a reasonable amount and then having a third wing stretch down to block the roll man, and it worked really well. Trey's vision was cut off a little bit more, I think, by Rubio's size and his arm length and the fact that they were putting a second set of arms a little bit closer to him. And, you know, there we did finally see a little bit of rookiness, if you will, from Trey there, because he wasn't ready for a tweak that a defense threw at him.
Right. So we've tossed a number of problems that the Jazz are going to face competitively, or at least that they did against the Timberwolves and may face going forward, which for all those Jazz fans who are cheering for every loss and hoping for Andrew Wiggins or Joel Embiid or Jabari Parker must be incredibly heartening. So let me give you at least one thing to worry those fans. Gordon Hayward played arguably his best three-game stretch as a Jazz man before this recent injury, where he was putting up 27 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and 60% from the field. In his game back against the Wolves, he put up 27 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 59% from the field. So he picked up where he left off almost exactly. So there's something in these losses to the Wolves to both hearten and dishearten just about every single Jazz fan, whether you're cheering for wins or you're cheering for losses. So for the rest of the podcast, we'd like to go beyond these Wolves games and take a little look at the Jazz schedule to finish out the rest of the season. The Jazz are presently 14-29. We've got 39 games to play, so we're a little past halfway. I think that's a good sample size to kind of figure out what we probably have in this team, and it may give us a little bit better ability to kind of look to the future and try to see like what lies in store for the Jazz to close out the season. So looking at the schedule, anything that jumps out to you guys, what do you notice?
I think that, you know, as is natural for any time in the NBA season, again, given the current structure, the way the lottery works and the way incentives are based for teams to win and lose, once you cross that halfway point and start chugging along to the All-Star game, teams have sort of defined themselves. You've got your defined contenders, of course, and your teams that are going to be shooting for the last playoff spots in each conference. And then you've got a few middle-of-the-road teams, although we seem to see less and less of those every year with the NBA realizing that being middle-of-the-road is completely pointless. And then...
Hey there, Ben. I'm a Bucks fan.
Sorry?
Besides, you know, right about the Jazz, I'm a big-time Bucks guy, so I know about that feeling.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you know about the middling thing, right? And then,
yes.
Of course, you see you have your teams that, you know, either aren't good enough to win games or aren't trying to win games or some combination of the two. And now that those are starting to be defined, I think you'll have more of an easy time maybe seeing what you... You know, I think a few of the Jazz games this season may have, and even recently, may have been a little surprising in terms of games that they won. You know, they beat Oklahoma City and they beat Denver, and Denver's not great, but they beat Detroit in Detroit. Again, Detroit's not a world beater, but that's a team that's trying to win games, so on and so forth. I think that sort of thing you might stop seeing as much of that. For example, the Jazz have Philadelphia at home in a couple of weeks on Wednesday the 12th. I'd be very surprised if they didn't win that game and win it handily. Just because, you know, Philadelphia may have been a great story earlier, but Philadelphia knows what they're doing now, and it's not trying to win games. And, you know, the Jazz have enough talent that I think they'll have an easy time. But on the other hand, they do play a lot of teams in the next little while that don't fit that bill. They've just over the next couple weeks, they have the Warriors, they have the Wizards, the Clippers in Los Angeles, they have Toronto and Dallas, the Heat again at home. Portland, Brooklyn, Minnesota, a whole bunch of teams in the next few weeks that are going to give them a real stiff fight. And unfortunately, for those who are only looking to see wins, they may be few and far between the next little bit.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've noticed as well. February 20th is the trade deadline, and so I think that is going to have or at least has the potential to have a disproportionate effect on this season. And the trade deadline is always important, but this season it might be, you know, a monumental shift. There's the potential for that. And yeah. I actually think that the Jazz are going to be a distinctly different team after the deadline, I suspect. I have them winning games against the Wizards or Sacramento, and then at least two of three against Toronto, Suns, and the Cavs. Now, all of those are teams that are not great, but they all have better records than the Jazz. And most of them...
Toronto's pretty good.
Honestly. Yeah, they really have turned around.
Yeah.
And so all of those games are against teams that are really trying to win and already have better records than the Jazz. And so you wouldn't ostensibly think that they're favorites. I think that they'll get a number of those before the trade deadline. After the deadline, I don't see them beating another team that they really shouldn't beat.
Yeah, first game after the deadline is Portland, and then Boston a couple of games after that on February the 24th is a possibility. Boston's really not trying to win too many games either.
Right.
They're easing Rondo back in, but it wouldn't be shocked at all if by then he was, you know, resting something or other.
In another uniform.
Or in another uniform. That wouldn't be the least bit shocking either. Boston is tearing it the full way down. But, you know, I think continuing to sort of answer your question generally about moving forward in the season, I think we're now – there's at least the possibility that we may be moving into what I'd like to think of as a sort of a third segment of the season for the Jazz. I think there have been two very distinct segments so far. The first, of course, being the start, which, you know, we all remember it wasn't good. A lot of factors went into that. Trey Burke wasn't playing, played a very, very difficult schedule. A lot of young pieces that didn't have much experience with each other against starters, so on and so forth. Then we had the second phase. Trey Burke returned. Enes Kanter was removed from the starting lineup, and they started playing it with Marvin Williams, the more small ball lineup. The offense improved quite a bit. Team started winning some games and maybe starting to make people think, you know, this team isn't nearly as bad as their record indicates. But now, with those couple of pretty sobering losses to Minnesota, and with, as we've discussed, the trade deadline looming and teams sort of starting to more figure themselves out, I think we may be settling into kind of an in-between those two first segments, where it's not nearly as bad as the start, of course, but it's not, you know, the Jazz also aren't a 35-40 win team over a full season, even maybe with people healthy, and especially not if they are having the average injuries that will naturally take place to your players.
And going back to the schedule, there's a span of games from Golden State on the 31st to Miami on, you know, the 8th, where we're going to play against playoff contenders, and that's the span of time where we're really going to see who could we possibly fit into the, you know, the scheme of the future, you know, in terms of the younger players like Favors, you know, Burke, Kanter. Like, we just talked about Kanter, and that's been time will really, you know, be impactful as we try to look for the future.
Yeah. Right. You're talking about a stretch where the Jazz will play the Warriors at home, then at the Clippers, Raptors at home, at Mavericks, and then they get the Heat at home, all in just over under a week. So that stretch I think really will tell a lot about who the players are and where the team is at.
That's a great bit of schedule making by the NBA there. I'm now looking at that. Like, let's fly four times in a week. Bit of a distraction there, but it's tough to maybe imagine this, and especially thinking from Coach Corbin's point of view, with something that we've discussed on the podcast before, where maybe he isn't 1,000,000% sure from the front office whether he's supposed to be doing his best to win these games or whether he's supposed to be figuring out how well his young players work together, so on and so forth. But in the spirit of what I wrote earlier and some further conversation that I had with a few readers on Twitter afterwards, which was quite enjoyable, actually, I would really like to see Favors and Kanter play more together. I know the combination hasn't been good. Trust me, I know. I wrote all about it. But they have to figure it out. I think that's the most important thing for the Utah Jazz right now. Because going forward, we know some things. We know Trey Burke's going to be good to maybe very good. We know that Derek Favors is going to be at least close to worth his money. We know that we're going to have a pretty good draft pick this year, if not a very good draft pick. What we need to figure out is whether our two top five big men draft picks can play together. And even if that means losing some more games this year, you know what? Maybe that's good. We need to see the two together against starters, in my opinion, as much as possible. And I really hope that Ty isn't so worried about you know, needing to win games to keep his job that he doesn't do this.
I agree completely with that. And I've been saying since the beginning of the season that I think that the Jazz have had two predominant goals for this season. I think one of them was to increase talent through the draft, and I think the other was to see if they have the front court of the future or not. And I think one of those is almost certain to be achieved to some degree, but unless they play more of Favors and Kanter together, I think that one of the primary objectives of the season has not been fulfilled. And I think carrying that over until next season is going to be would be a really courting negative consequences.
Yeah, I just don't think it's a good idea. That there's leaving it to the point where you no longer have full control over the situation just naturally to me doesn't, especially when you have every opportunity this year to find these things out. You know, there's no roster that Jazz are putting out on the floor that's making the playoffs right now. They're too far behind. They're too far behind, and there's too many other good teams. There's really no point, and there's really no downside to figuring out exactly what we've got there and having a real sample size so that we know.
Right. So Dakota, any other thoughts about either the schedule or what Ben and I have been talking about with the Favors and Kanter pairing?
Not at all. I agree with both of you. This, you know, last 25, 30, 35, you know, game stretch to end the season, it's really going to be imperative to see how they fit together, even though, of course, like, you know, Ben said and, you know, Ben wrote, they haven't, you know, fit together at all. But going into the future, you know, either we have to trade, you know, Kanter, or we have to have this, you know, pairing work out, because we really have no other option in the front court unless you want to, you know, depend on Jeremy Evans and Rudy Gobert going forward.
Yeah, and those two are, you know, projects at best. I think Evans has shown some flashes this year, but he just never seems to be able to put it together for long periods at a time on both ends. He'll have games where he makes an impact on one end or the other, but he doesn't have too many where he makes a big impact on both. And, you know, the thing to me is sorry, as I stutter a little bit, that's seeing that there is a little bit of light. Somebody today on Twitter, while I was having these conversations, pointed out that in an extreme, and David Locke has pointed this out as well, in a very, very small sample size, only 19 minutes, there is a lineup with Favors and Kanter, which is the Trey Burke, Alec Burks, and Gordon Hayward, plus those two, that has been very successful, both offensively and defensively. In fact, especially defensively, the rates they've allowed defensively are lower than the Pacers for this entire season. Now, of course, 19 minutes is almost nothing.
It's enough to hope, right?
There's always enough to hope, and hope especially that we just see more of it. And that was the main theme of the conversation we had on Twitter, is just, you know, what's the worst that could happen? We lose some games? I don't think that's exactly the worst outcome in the world.
No. Yeah. Well, Ben talked about Tyrone Corbin and the complex situation he's in of needing to win but needing not to win and not really knowing kind of where to go in that continuum. Well, one thing that I think is apparent is that even if he does his best to win, it's highly unlikely that this team is going to win games at an increased rate over what they already have averaged thus far in the season. When I look at the schedule, and we'll close with this, I look at, they have 23 games against the West and 16 versus the East.
Ooh.
If they were to continue playing the West and East the way that they have, that would project that they'll win 13 more games, which would put them at 27 wins for the season. They have 21 home games and 22 road games. If they were to continue to win those at home and on the road the way they have been, they'd win 14 games, which would be 28 wins for the season. Basketball Reference projects them to win 29 games, and the recent ESPN forecast panel projected that they're going to win 28 games.
I think all of those are a win or two high. I don't think, not to be too much of a negative Nancy, but I don't think those are really accounting much for what we've seen in terms of just the, even just in these last couple of games, with how much the loss of one regular rotation player can really kill things, especially if it's either Burke or Favors, both of whom, and we did confirm that it was a hip for Favors, correct? They're not going to be rushing him. And if anything ever happens to Burke, same thing, they're not going to be rushing him. I think that might be overselling us just a bit, especially considering that there's a lot of the teams we play aren't going to be having these same set of circumstances. They're going to have every incentive to be playing all their players and doing as well as they can.
Right. So that's our look at the schedule, and to sum it up, it's going to be tough. There's going to be plenty of challenges for this young Jazz team. There are going to be plenty of opportunities for this young Jazz team and for the front office, and some of them may involve some really tough decisions that have implications going far into the future, but hey, that's what's going to make it exciting. This last half of the season should be quite a roller coaster for those on the Jazz and for all the Jazz fans, so we'll be here every week with you for your midweek fix for all things Jazz. Thanks for being with us, and we will see you next week.